Children of the Night.
Some books are dangerous, not to be opened with impunity.
The book is bound in human flesh and inked in human blood.
Did you read about that girl that was murdered last night?
All red blood.
If you're not greedy, you will go far.
Read it.
Well, who needs books anyway? I don't need books.
This book.
Hardly recreational reading material.
Can you read the name on the casket?
Well, the book's talking about the worst beast of them all. It says...
Hello out there, all my creatures of the night. I hope you've crossed yourselves and checked your shelves for that one book that always haunts your thoughts. Because today we're going to be covering the dark, terrifying, and strange world of the written word. I'm your host, Cece, and this is Something Red. So today on Something Red, I thought we would start the year off with our belated, well, actually it was an early Christmas present to the collectors out there who'd been waiting quite some time for it. But if you signed up for the Babadook collectible pop-up book, you finally received it right before Christmas. And my good friend Dusty from horrorwriters.com also decided that having this was a must-have. And he's here today to talk about it. So thanks for coming on here, Dusty.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So we can just jump right in. What have you got going on over there at horrorwriters.com?
We just had a big upgrade. We had been .net for a very, very long time, and mm-hmm. we took the leap, and now we're .com, which is very, very exciting. The guy who started the site, Sean, great guy, he has come back and kind of revamped everything, so it's a new design. He's started up a podcast, which is something we talked about like 2 years ago. Finally did it. I did one on local legend here in Kentucky, which I was very excited about and talked entirely too fast through, but it was still exciting. We've got one going on now of writers of short stories, reading their short stories and releasing podcasts that way.
Very cool.
I think the first one just went up yesterday, which is cool.
Awesome.
But yeah, we're just a big revamp, got some merch up there. New, I think Edgar Allan Poe shirt just went up. It's an exciting time, man. What a time to be alive.
Yes, exactly. I'm really excited because I was checking y'all out for quite some time while y'all were horrorwriters.net. So I'm very glad you were able to, not that being a .com is making you any more legit than you already were, but you know, I know it looks more legit, and that's what matters.
It feels
sometimes legit
in my heart, and that's really all we're looking for.
Exactly. Well, cool. Well, thanks for wanting to talk about the Babadook today.
Every chance I get.
I know, right? It's been a long time coming. I think we signed up for the collector's edition of the actual Babadook pop-up book pretty soon after the movie came out. And the movie came out in 2014. So we waited almost 2 years.
Yeah, it was like a year and a half or two years, I think. Yeah.
So I appreciate the continuous notifications we got of its progress, but that just made it worse. I was like, just email me when it's ready and when I should expect it. But I'm assuming anyone who's listening has seen the movie. But if you haven't, the Babadook is kind of a horror thriller. I mean, it's obviously a monster kind of flick. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2014, and it kind of revolves around a mother, Amelia, and her son. I think his name is Sam.
Yeah.
And Sam was born on the day that his father dies in a really horrific car crash. And it's kind of haunted them and followed them throughout their life. So we get dumped into the day-to-day life of Amelia and Sam, and it's pretty intense. They have some unstable situations happening with them. And one day this book shows up on their doorstep, and it's titled Mr. Babadook. So Mr. Babadook comes into their life and pretty much starts screwing some stuff up immediately. So we see Amelia and Sam kind of dealing with this introduction of this outsider and how he influences and kind of dictates their day-to-day life, not only with each other, but, you know, the outside world, and how they kind of shut themselves off from the world and how they interact with one another. And the book is a little, you know, it kind of foreshadows what happens in their relationship. So I don't know what made us think that having that book in person was a good idea, but here we are. So
still alive. We're still alive.
Yeah, we're so still alive. Yeah, we're good. And we have read the actual Babadook book. So what do you think about it? I mean, it's a beautifully done, handmade, hand cut, you know, stitched together pop-up book.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, you mentioned the constant emails that came, I believe, directly from the director, Jennifer mm-hmm. Kent.
Yeah, I think so.
Oversaw basically every single detail, and it was every step along the way. It was, we're almost there, but we want it to look exactly like the book. We want it to be perfect. And so you knew it was going to be good when it came out, and man, it looks just gorgeous. Like, the cover's gorgeous. It's like this red fabric with just this black inlay with the image of the monster, Mr. Babadook on the top. The pages are just unreal. You got these little, it's a pop-up book. You got these weird little flaps where you can make him wave. you've got ones you turn the page and he's just in your face threatening to kill you. It's beautiful. It's horrifyingly beautiful. It's gorgeous. Everything I wanted from it, for sure.
Definitely. So do you, you know, we kind of talked about it before the show, but do you think that, how do you think having the book in your possession kind of change, like, do you think that influences you at all? Like, how does it change you having it?
I mean, I haven't felt any change, but I assume it's coming. One of the things I loved about the movie was she gets the book initially, and there's a scene where she's flipping back and she sees the blank pages at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this odd scene of why are there blank pages? And then she gets rid of it, and then it comes back, and the pages are filled out, like you said, of terrible things, of her killing her dog, killing her son, and then ultimately killing herself. And then there's still blank pages at the end. So you get this book, and there's actually more in there than the movie. You've got kind of the ending of their story, kind of how that ends. I think it's probably an extra 2 pages from what we see in the movie. And there's still blank pages. So I go, I check it. I don't want to open it too much, man. I don't want to ruin it. But I check it probably once a month to make sure there's not a scene of me just doing something terrible. Like, if it can see the future, I want to know what's going to happen. So that's that. Every now and then I just get on edge and I check it and the pages are still blank. And I breathe a little sigh of relief because it's not, my face hasn't gotten ripped off yet.
Oh yeah.
I haven't killed anything. Like, so I don't know. We're doing good, but I'm still checking to make sure, you know?
I mean, how terrifying would it be if, I mean, it's terrifying enough. So the book arrives in the movie just randomly on her doorstep. I don't think it's in any kind of, you know, slip cover.
Mm-mm.
Ours obviously arrives in a slip cover, but it comes directly from Mr. Babadook. Right, and there, you open it. There's no, like, packing slip. There's nothing. Like, it's basically you open the box and there's a very nice, well-packed black book box to keep it safe, obviously, in shipping, but it's very much like this randomly showed up on your doorstep. So how terrifying do you think it would have been had it shown up? And like you said, you see Amelia and Sam's story, and the next, like, couple of pages were the book being shipped to a new door and then the blank pages. Like, I don't know that I could have handled that.
I might not have ordered it. Like,
well, you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have seen it until after you actually got it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I probably would have shut it and pretended I didn't see it. But, like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. Mr. Babadook knows. Like, he would have known that I would, like, that I was playing a game. Like, I was pretending not to see it. So, like, my fate was already sealed at that point, but I pretend that it wasn't, I guess.
So we also kind of talked about how, you know, now that we're 3 years basically out from the movie itself, you know, coming out and people experiencing the movie for themselves, the movie is really about, you know, two family members experiencing this intense grief and this horrible, you know, tragedy. And one's an adult and one's a child, which not, you know, there's very obvious differences, but there's differences in how they cope and how they process these feelings. And it's really interesting how the book and Mr. Babadook, not only as a character, but as this, you know, this vessel influences both of them. And I think we both read the same article where I didn't realize at the beginning, or realized upon the first viewing of the movie, that Amelia is really the author of this book. And that, you know, to be very cliche, you're the author of your own horror story or story in general. I mean, I guess you can make it whatever you wanted it to be. But in this instance, you know, she is experiencing these things and experiencing the Babadook, you know, manifesting itself as this monster that's terrorizing her and her child. And I thought that was really well handled, not only in the movie, but in the book itself, like the actual book that you and I have, that it's so abstract that it lends itself to multiple interpretations.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
And I think that, you know, it's kind of, it's really interesting to go back upon a second viewing. Like you were saying, it's really interesting to see, you know, the subtle hints of Amelia writing this book herself and how you see her hands covered in charcoal and you think, okay, well, you know, maybe it's her lighting the pages on fire and then the book coming back and, you know, her flipping through the pages. But the entire book is made out of charcoal drawings, basically. And she mentions how she's a child author, or she's kind of dabbled in, you know, children's books before. And I think you mentioned too in our like kind of pre-show conversation about how the Babadook makes his entrance into their life under the guise of being a children's book.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, they pick it up and they start reading it. I think there's, she does a great job. I can't remember her. Essie Davis, I think, is the actress. When she picks it up and it's just this weird moment of, this looks enough like a children's book where I'm going to read it. And I just hope it shuts my child up.
Right.
she opens it up and it's very, it becomes clear like within, I'd say about five pages that it's clearly not a children's book, but it opens up as kind of like this fairy tale whimsy, like, hey, I'm Mr. Babadook and this is my book. And then suddenly it's like, you can't get rid of me. Bah, ha, ha. And then his face is like just attacking you from the pages. So it becomes clear very early that it's not, but yeah, that's the reason she kind of brings it in and start reading it is, it's enough of a children's book, I guess, to where she thought it was okay to redo her child. But at that point in her life, I don't think she cared because it made him stop screaming. So
right. And yeah, well, and in this instance, her child was an intense screamer. So yeah, exactly. I don't really blame her really either. do you, I've always really been kind of enthralled with the aspect of how a book, regardless of, you know, it being a thriller, a horror story, a, you know, a comedy, whatever, how the written word can influence you just because you've read it. And, you know, it's interesting to see it played out on film that way. Because, I mean, you know, there's several movies where you have cursed books, you know, you have the, you know,
Necronomicon, definitely the first one that comes
exactly to mind. Or you know, the grimoire of, you know, any witch, or you know, you have these books that just, you know, by, you know, speaking the words that are in it, you've cursed yourself. And it's really interesting that just owning this book for them influences their life so intensely. So I know we've joked about it, but do you, and you know, you have a small daughter, how do you kind of feel about owning a book in general? That's kind of, I mean, kind of strange and can lend itself to multiple interpretations.
I keep it in a box, like where she can't see it. So, I mean, that's one thing. She's a year and a half old. So she,
yeah, she I was really, like, she's still really young. She's so still young. I think you're okay for a while.
but it's enough to where she can kind of talk. I don't want her to start saying Babadook. So, you know, I definitely keep it away from her. But I mean, like you said, we joked about it. But I mean, I thought about it before I bought it as like this. Like, what if there's a one in a million chance this is actually real? Probably more than one in a million. But like, what if by buying this book, I've introduced the Babadook. I've just invited him to my home. Amelia in the movie does not know. Like you said, it appears on our doorstep and she picks it up. Whether she wrote it or not, subconsciously, she picked it up and did that herself. Like, we knew what this was, man.
Right.
So if there's some story about, like, well, Dusty in Kentucky is, you know, he died, and, you know, before he did, he's ranting about a Babadook. Like, everyone would just nod their head and go, yeah, well, yeah, we kind of saw that coming. Like, he knew what he got himself into. So, like, the largest part of me knows it's not real and knows it's fine, and there's a very, very, very small part that still thinks, what have I done? This is a bad move, man. It's
sure.
a bad move.
Well, I mean, you kind of mentioned, too, like, is multiple people owning this? Because I'm not sure how large of a run it was. I know they kind of mentioned it, but
I think they had it numbered. I think it was like between 1,000 and 2,000. Like, not huge.
Yeah, not huge. But I mean, that's still a considerable amount.
Yeah, it's a lot of Babadooks.
It's a lot of Babadooks. And it's interesting that I'm sorry, you brought up earlier in a pre-show conversation. You know, does owning this and enough people owning this, like, do we kind of speak it into existence? You know, like, do we, you know, you kind of brought up Krampus, but like those things started as folktale and as, you know, this word of mouth, this, you know, this traditional story, like, handed down through generations. Like, it, you know, generations from now, have we kind of started that? We started this, like, is this what's going to happen? And, you know, a few generations that there really will be a type of Babadook, because if so, he's terrifying.
Yeah, he's not pleasant. He's not pleasant. I mean,
no, the good thing is one of the monsters I would not want to meet in real life.
You know, you can really just kind of give him worms and he's fine. So, I mean, that's like the cure for the Babadook is fine, I guess. But we were talking about it. Like, they kept him in a basement and fed him worms. But my house is like cement slab. So, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, you know, I got like an attic, like a small attic. I guess I could try to stash them up there or something. But like, I don't know.
I don't know. I still think the woods are your best option.
Yeah.
Although I will say.
I got him fairly close to my house. Like, not right next to him, but enough to where I could probably get him out there. If I, you know, dangled a worm on a stick or something, I could probably get him out there if I needed to.
I'm pretty sure it's like, you know, it's like fly fishing, just kind of, you know, dangle it enough that he sees it and then fling it out there really well.
There you go, boy. Yeah. I feel like I could probably do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really want to think about that. I don't have a basement either. And, you know, I can't remember. I know that the main BGH show did a podcast on the movie, and I can't really remember if I talked about the symbolism of worms, because it's really kind of strange that she feeds him worms, and worms are symbolic of death and renewal. So it's interesting that, like, she's feeding him these this symbol of the death that they're moving past. But it's also a renewal aspect of, well, are you, you know, in her, I guess in her world, she's learning to, you know, kind of start over and live with this rather than just get over it.
Sure.
And I'm like, what if you, I mean, look, I live in the city. I'm sure I could find some worms, but I don't know that, like, they're as readily available as, you know.
Sure.
The farm that I kind of grew up on.
So I'm fine, but you might be screwed, basically.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do. Like, we have a lot of chipmunks and squirrels. Like, I wonder if he would appreciate that.
Seems like a reasonable fella. You could probably just ask him.
I mean, I could get my dog to kill the squirrel, and that would be really easy. Then I just, like, fling the squirrel somewhere. I mean, we kind of have an attic, but the attic scares me, so it I try to like avoid it, that it, as well.
I feel like I could get him up there, but I do feel like it'd be hard to get him up those steps. Like, I I don't know if it worked that well.
How do you get past him once you get him up the steps? Like, is he sideways shuffle up the steps and then you sideways shuffle back down? There's a lot of...
He'd probably have to. Happening. We only ever really see him from the front, and he's like a very wide figure.
Like, how deep is he? Like, how far back does that shadow go?
Like, what if he has a really... Yeah, I don't know. yeah, I mean, for all we know, I mean, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Like, for all we know, he is basically the paper character from the book, right?
Yeah.
Like, he could just be, like, paper thin, but, like, just terrifying.
I was gonna say, but, like, paper thin, like, he's very elastic in that kind of...
Yeah, yeah, you get those scenes from the corner of the room where he kind of grows, and even in the book, he's different sizes kind of depending on... He's got one where he's hovering over the child and he's taking up the whole room, and you got another one where he's kind of just chilling in a closet. So yeah, I mean, he kind of is, the size is different depending on.
I don't like that Jell-O-esque ability to mold into spaces. I like to know how big you are and how much space you're taking up in the room so I can, appreciate our personal space.
That's pretty fair. Yeah, I mean, that's a fair thing to want to know about somebody. I will say in the
especially
movie,
a monster.
Going back for a second, this is something else I was thinking about. Like, you're talking about her possibly writing the book. Like, I did think the second time I watched the movie that it was odd for someone who was so scared of the Babadook. She had a lot of things in the house that could kind of look like the Babadook. She had like a coat rack in the corner in the shadows with like a little top hat and little gloves on. Like, why would just take that down, man? Yeah. Like, it looks like the Babadook. Just get rid of it. Like, just remove all of those things.
I mean, if I have a sweatshirt on a chair that I even, like, out of the corner of my eye, catch it, and I'm like, is someone sitting there? That never happens again. I would not be hanging up a top hat in my foyer where I'm like, is that a person? Is it a monster? No.
I've got my daughter, we had a little snowsuit out, and I hung it on a chair and legit thought it was one of those little brood kids.
Oh, no.
That had just, like, invaded my house. So I had to take that down.
I mean, your daughter is adorable, haunted children scare the shit out of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, that's accurate. That's terrifying. Yeah, they do. I don't know what's...
Not pleasant.
not pleasant. Well, the other not pleasant thing we also kind of mentioned before is that, we own these books now, and obviously we, have a type of responsibility. Like, I'm not sure if I ever want to get rid of it, that I'm just going to, like, toss it in the Goodwill bin. Because, I don't know. Maybe you're supposed to burn it. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do. Not that I'm a champion of burning books, because
I love my books,
but I'm like, what are you supposed to do with this? It's like,
well, burning like books, we know didn't get rid of it.
Well, that's
so
true.
Maybe Goodwill does.
I think that you just like pass it on to somebody.
Yeah, it's like The Ring, where it's like she makes the copy and then she's like, I will give it to some homeless person or whatever the devil she does. It's like that, but with like people who shop at Goodwill.
But is it like it follows where like eventually it makes itself back to you? Like, there's only so many people in your state.
She rips the book up and throws it in the trash and it finds her way back. So
I think you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah. I mean, I own it. And so, I mean, I'm not getting rid of it because it looks awesome, but also because I think getting rid of it, I'm going to die anyway. I might as well die owning something really cool. Just clutched in my cold, dead fingers. So.
Well, what about the people who made the book? Like, you kind of mentioned before how haunted you would feel if you're the one making this book. And I mean, these pop-up pages are super intricate.
Yeah.
Like, there's one page where the Babadook is screaming and his mouth is kind of wide open and his teeth are all, popping out. And there's multiple layers of teeth. So, like, these things, I mean, it looks hand-cut.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that you would make a stamp for the Babadook.
I hope not.
God bless us. I hope not. But I'm like that, to wake up every morning. I mean, it would be awesome to be part of making it, 2,000 handmade books. But at the same time, to wake up every morning and be like, I'm having to make this really dark book. Is kind of heavy.
Just put on your coat and hat and just eat your cereal and just kiss your wife goodbye as you're heading off to the Babadook factory. Like, it's another day. I mean, this like you said, like we said, it's like a year and a half, man. Like they did this for a year and a half of just staring at these disfigured, horrifying faces, trying to make them like more disfigured and horrifying. And just, like you said, like it has to be haunting. Like I carry this thing with me just by looking at it. These images are with me. These people worked on it. And I actually have a theory I'd like to drop on you that it took a year and a half because there kept being disasters. Babadook related disasters that they had to keep rebuilding stuff.
Well, as you pointed out, because I just was excited to rip open the box and wasn't paying attention to detail. I hope that there were not Babadook related instances because it was made in Atlanta. Yeah. Well, technically Decatur, but Decatur is like a suburb of Atlanta. And I actually live really close to Decatur. So I'm like, God forbid, please just don't come here.
I mean, at least we know like he's, if there's only one. So we talked about this earlier. We kind of touched on it before that if each book indeed carries a Babadook as the rules of the movie The Babadook Dictate, mm-hmm. there's only one in that movie.
Sure.
Well, now they've just produced like 2,000. So mm-hmm. we've either got 2,000 Babadooks just running around, just one for each book, or you got one
hanging out.
Yeah, just hanging out, man, just checking his email, waiting for someone else to read the book. Like you either got that or you got like one just Santa Krampus type Babadook that just travels like where all the books are, and just based on your vicinity, like you're going before I am.
Yeah,
because you're closer to him. You're closer to his hub.
But I'm hoping that maybe whatever hobble. I'm hoping that it's really more like since he was conceived here, in his physical form, sure. that he's bored with Atlanta and that he wants to go everywhere else first. Or, which I don't know. I don't know what's worse for us.
He's just hitting the nightlife down there. Like he's good, man. He's going to future shows, you know, he's just having a blast down in Atlanta.
That's
true. That could be really good for us.
Hitting up future shows, the strip clubs. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, what are you gonna do? So I might have some time. I don't know if that makes it worse.
You might, yeah.
To like, you know, be the last on the list. But, you know, I'll keep an eye out. I might see him at these shows.
Yeah, I mean you can't miss him. He's really big. he's sometimes big. True. Wears a top hat.
That's not really that outrageous in Atlanta, you know.
At least this part. Like he might just be T-Pain. Like I don't know. I don't know for sure.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot to think about. Thank you. I don't know how I feel about that now. So is there anything that, you know, having the book and recently rewatching the movie that just kind of stood out to you, or, you know, was it just cool to have the book in general? Why, like having seen the book in its physical form and then rewatching the movie?
It was, I mean, if nothing else, just to kind of, just to compare almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd mentioned many times, like it took a year and a half to just get this perfect. And the director's overseeing every single, like down to the pop-up mechanisms. Like they wanted this perfect, the pull tabs, mm-hmm. like everything, just to kind of compare it. And it looks, man, it looks dead on. Like it really just looks dead on.
Yeah. It's,
and those added pages are cool. Cause you do kind of get the end of the movie in there. So you get something you don't actually see there. And some of it's kind of darkly comedic, but like, it's, I don't know, man, like that's the main thing I picked up. Like, again, like I said, the, just why she got so many Babadook things around. Like that was the main thing. Like just distance yourself from your Babadook material, lady. But I mean, seeing it, I kind of kept it next to me and looked mm-hmm. at it out of the corner of my eye to make sure it didn't start moving or anything. Like make sure the movie didn't activate it.
Yes.
But it was good. I was cool. It stayed still. So I was good on that front.
I have to give you credit. I don't know that I would have the book open or even near me while watching the movie. That's very like Page Master-esque. I don't know that I can handle all of that.
Well, it's the old saying, Cece, you keep your friends close, you keep your Babadooks closer. So I'm keeping my Babadooks closer.
Yeah. Maybe he appreciates it. Maybe he appreciates seeing himself on TV, you know, little like self-indulgent moment of, you know, I look
just
good.
Open
it's
it
cool.
up and just like stuck it like where it was. That's you. Look, buddy. Yeah, that's you. Oh, you're on the TV.
You're so good. You deserve an award for that.
I look back and that little pop-up Babadook's just smiling. He's just so happy.
I mean, he is smiling on every page, which is more terrifying than entertaining.
Yeah, he's ready to smile, and he's also ready to just eat faces. Like, it's, he can really do a lot of stuff.
Obviously, we can't really recommend it since it was a limited edition, and it's kind of weird to recommend it. But have you told other people that you own it? Like, have you enjoyed your... your spoils,
on the internet, but like, I don't, most of my friends aren't really into horror movies, and especially aren't into those kinds of horror movies, and so like, I kind of feel like if I told them, like, oh man, I got the Babadook book, I'd have to explain it, and then like, it reflects poorly on just me, just my mental state, and I don't,
like, why did you buy that?
I don't really feel like doing that, so I opened it at work. I had to pick it up at the post office. I'd open it at work, and my walls are all glass, and like just leafing through it at my desk, just people walking by, and just this massive charcoal face like hovering over the bed of a child with just these awful angry letters. Like,
yeah, I hope you didn't flip to the page where she's strangling her child at work.
I did. I went through the whole thing. It was poor. And I'm right by like the front door on my floor.
Whoops.
and my walls are glass. Like, it was not well thought out. So I'm surprised I still got a job, to be honest with you. But, no, I mean, yeah, I haven't really told many people. But how about you?
No, and kind of the same. My boss is very much into it was interesting because she was there. One of my bosses, I have two bosses. One of my bosses was really into it. I didn't show the other one. But she really enjoyed the art. I mean, I work for an art consulting company. Mm-hmm. So the intrigue of it being, you know, hand done in this very intricate, and, you know, she's very much into indigenous art. Okay. And she loved that aspect of it, that it was very primal, which, I mean,
oh yeah,
the book itself, as well as the movie, deal with these very primal emotions and, you know, these very basic human instincts. So that was really cool, because I didn't initially think about it or think about looking at it that way. So that was kind of cool to an extent, because she's this older British lady who does not watch horror movies at all. Like, I think the most like thrilling thing she watches is maybe Sherlock occasionally. And
not the dark ones though. Not the dark ones.
No. So that was cool to, like, you know, get a very, you know, for lack of a better term, like, normies aspect on it.
Sure.
And I initially watched The Babadook with my husband, and I was super excited to buy the book. And he was like, I mean, that's cool, but like, why did you buy it? And I was like, I don't know. I just did it, like, too late now. So, yeah, I haven't really, I posted about it on Instagram, and a few people who are, you know, in the horror community are like, oh, like, you know, where'd you get it? Like, how do I get it? But I know, I was like, this is a personal gain, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know if it elevates my collector status or just like intensifies the oddity of my collection, but
it's just cursed everything in your house. Like, all of the stuff you've gotten now is just cursed.
I mean, I bought it. Anyway. I was like, I bought a antique embalming table from an auction, which was probably
Do you eat on that? Is that like your dinner?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank God.
Right. I mean, it's being used as a coffee table in my studio, which, you know, it's an antique folding one. So it more or less looks more like a wicker folding, like it like folds out and it's just this long rectangle. It's not like the cold enameled, you know, porcelain table with like drains on it. So it's not that bad, which
God.
I don't know.
It's more normal than that. That's
right. Well, it could be worse. Cause I mean, that means it's even more old, you know, so God knows who's died on it, but, everyone. And the Babadook himself is probably like where they drained his blood to, you know, make the cover of the book. But
I didn't think about that. It is red. Yeah,
it is red. Yeah. And it's interesting that like they pick the red cover, because that's the only color in the entire book. Like, it's black and white, mm-hmm. except for this very stark, very blood red cover. I think
there is, the only other time there's red is the page where she slits her own throat. There's there's blood red on that, I'm pretty sure.
You might be right.
I think that might be it, though.
I just flipped to the page where you can roll up. Oh, you're right. Where she, that is the only other red.
It's really nice and pleasant. Yeah,
it is. And I also just flipped to the page where they show you Bugsy, the dog's the dog's headstone. Yeah.
You lift it up. You can lift up the tab, and he's in there.
You can see his little skeleton.
His little skeleton. You can really also sad. See the Babadook just peeking out from the basement in that picture. Yeah. That's like my favorite thing.
What the hell? You just killed my dog, or made me kill my dog, which is even worse.
I wanted him with like his little hands up there, like Kilroy or whatever his name is.
Oh yeah, no, that's horrible. So yeah, well,
that's so good.
No, it's horrible. it's good. I wish that everyone knows someone who owns this book, so that you can experience it in person. But I don't know that I don't know that I say you've missed out a whole lot, because now I'm feeling a little cursed that I own it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, probably. Yeah. I wouldn't. It's something I'm really happy to have, but I wouldn't wish on anyone else, I guess.
Yeah. It's a burden, but a burden I've gladly, accepted to bear.
The next year of my life before the Babadook takes me is still going to be awesome. I'm going to be really happy for the next year. So,
well, it's all you can do. You just gotta enjoy it while you can.
It's true. It's true.
Well, in books that you can recommend, do you have any books that are maybe similar or that you think about in relation to the Babadook?
So I was trying to think of this. I used to work in a bookstore, and I'm pretty sure there were some creepy old pop-up books, but I mean, for the life of me, I can't think of them now. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go with, as we mentioned, I've got a daughter. She's a year and a half, which means we're all board books, because she rips things. Rips everything she possibly can. And I realized, a lot of children's board books are just really creepy, like especially the old ones, like unintentionally creepy, but creepy nonetheless. And talking about feeling haunted, like some of these like legit make me feel bad about myself. So like the two that I'm thinking of, one's very famous, is Goodnight Moon. I think everyone knows Goodnight Moon. The thing that always freaks me out is there's that the quiet old lady whispering hush. That just, I assume the book is in real time because they're just saying goodnight to things around the room. And she just kind of disappears randomly between pages and then reappears like two pages later. And there's never anything, like they don't call her mom. I think it's a rabbit because the whole thing is rabbits. Like for all I know, it's like the previous rabbit that died in that house. Because there's all, she's sitting in a rocking chair and there's other things sitting on the rocking chair when she's not there.
Yeah.
So I assume she's like not a physical being. I think of her as like the shushing librarian from Ghostbusters or something.
Yeah.
But like more sinister to a child, just like go to sleep or I'm going to take your soul. So that one freaks me out. Recently, I read that probably 50 times and it just recently freaks me out. The other one, I honestly don't know the words of any of this one because I can't look at the words. It's called My Little Book About God. It came out in 1956. I don't know if you've seen this. Apparently, I think it was a golden book.
Okay. It sounds like a golden book.
Yeah. To make it even creepier, so the version is my mother-in-law has it. She got it from the library. It doesn't even have an author. It just says illustrated by, which means, I mean, the devil maybe authored it. Like, I don't know. I don't know who authored it. But like all the pictures are just so creepy, man. Like it's filled with these just like these dead-eyed children, like just staring. Like one of them is drinking tea, just like staring with her eyes just right back at you. It creeps me out. Then the ones that are standing are just like all oddly proportioned. Like it feels like the whole book is like Village of the Damned. But like the ones that they have where they show their whole bodies, there's one image in particular where it's like a brother and sister holding hands outside a house and the limbs are too long and they're standing slightly off. And the house, I assume, is just covered in blood on the inside. Like it's a horrifying book. Again, I don't know the words because I can't look at the words, but every image of that book just is filled with just dead-eyed children. And I feel like, and I, you know, I'm, I I'm into horror, obviously. Somewhat recently, like past, you know, 10, 15 years or whatever of my life. I feel like even if I wasn't, I would find that creepy and off-putting. Like, there's a certain sense of being a horror fan where you see enough scary stuff.
Sure,
where you spot kind of scary stuff where there is none.
But right.
This book, man, like, it's just... The whole thing is off. Like, I can't properly describe it. Like, just do an image search at some point. Find the one of, like, the girl and the boy standing outside the house. It's creepy. Like, the whole thing is just creepy. So those...
I'm going to make that the cover of this episode.
Please do. I'll send you the image. Man, it's...
I hope you make your wife read that. You're like, I'll read any book, but I can't read that one.
It's at my mother-in-law's house, and she's... This
very, oh, good. So woman. Make her read it.
I had to take pictures of it when she was cooking, had her back turned, because I didn't want to make her feel bad. But I was like,
sure, of course.
I have to, like, I got to remember what this book is. It's creepy, man. So those those are my two. They're children's books, but just filled with evil. Just filled with evil.
Just filled to the brim.
those are the two I've got.
Well, mine are definitely not as horrifying as that. It's a little too real. But sure. I was doing a little research on pop-up books and the concept of, like, newer pop-up books, and I didn't realize that The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon by Stephen King had a pop-up book.
Ooh.
And I obviously haven't seen it in person, but like, seeing the reviews about it, everyone talks about how great it is and how, like vivid the illustrations are, and that the illustrations and seeing the pop-up book makes the book itself more terrifying. So that was really cool. Nice. And I couldn't find who illustrated it. I did several searches and tried to, like, you know, zoom in on Google Images. So if anyone knows who illustrated it, please let me know. I would be very glad and gracious to know that. But the other one is, I know Del Toro's Don't Be Afraid of the Dark didn't really get a whole lot of, or it didn't get great reviews. I thought it was an awesome movie.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm really into the dark, like real fairy tales. Like, grim fairy tales are super jacked up. Like, they're horrible.
Yeah, they really are.
That's kind of how this, how Don't Be Afraid of the Dark was, you know. It was more of a folk tale rather than this, like, you know, monster movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, Blackwood's Guide to Dangerous Fairies, which is written by Del Toro, but also Christopher Golden. And then it's illustrated by Troy Nixie. And I mean, I'm in love with anything that Del Toro does. So to have a book where, you know, his images are really emphasized, mm-hmm. and just, you know, super vivid, is always on my list. So those are my two recommendations to go along with your dead-eyed good. Children. You know, balance it out a little bit over there.
It's a good mix.
Yeah. Well, since we have thoroughly cursed ourselves with Babadook, is there, do you want to let everyone know where to find you on Twitter, your other podcast? I know you also have a Packers podcast for you sports fans out there.
Yeah, I do. So I'm on Twitter at Dusty Evely. It's last name is, it's like Everly, but without the R, but you can still call me Everly if you feel like it. But yeah, I have, I write for a site called Pack to the Future. I kind of do some Packers film study stuff. That's time consuming and a lot of fun. And I do the podcast over there as well. So it's just Pack to the Future. I think we started up this year, last year, it all runs together, man. But yeah, we talk football and usually upcoming opponents, and it's always a blast. I try to work in horror whenever I can, but, They don't let me talk much. So,
well, I hope you got a lot of talking in there during your Hail Mary of the most recent game.
We did,
because I'm more of a college football fan, but I was watching that game and I'm not sure I picked my jaw up off the floor. I was like, "What just happened?"
It was something else, man.
It was impressive, I have to say. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah.
You'll have to come back. We'll have to talk about, you know, something a little less cursed and, you know, intensely spooky.
I just ordered a Krampus ornament, so like maybe we can just talk about that. We'll just talk about the Krampus ornament for a while.
maybe the Babadook and Krampus can be friends. That's I think the Babadook just needs some friends.
Yeah, go to some shows happy. Together. Yeah, I think they'd have a good time down there.
They would both enjoy future shows, I think.
I'd be upset if they didn't enjoy future shows, then you know, just take me now. Just take me now.
Yeah. So, well, for everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. We can be reached at somethingredpodcast@gmail.com, or you can send any creepy books to our headquarters. We are always open to those as well. We are on Twitter at somethingredbgh, and I'm personally on Twitter at cc_riots. So check us out. Let us know. Drop us a line. Anything you want to hear us talk about or any recommendations, we would love to have them. This has been Something Red. I'm Cece. And remember that the scariest stories are the ones you never tell. Good night.
Something red.